Previously, on part one of Todd and Preston's Drive Time Chat number three.
The podcast that is having to wing it yet again.
Greetings and salutations. It is the Oppenheimer to Todd's Barbie.
In what way do I resemble Barbie?
So why don't we get started with the writer's strike?
I'm supportive of the writers and actors. It does sound like the strike is a good thing. At the same time, it sucks. There's yet another delay to all of our shows.
The worker needs to take this stance now. The wrestlers are considered independent contractors. If they don't do it now, there will be zero money in acting in a few years. But shall we move on to the list of projects that have been delayed because of these strikes? The Blade movie, Superman Legacy, The Thunderbolts, Spider-Man, No Way Home sequel, Team 23, Andor season 2, Blade Runner show, The Boys, all cop shows are on delay, Citadel season 2, Daredevil Born Again, Days of Our Lives, Last of Us season 2, The Lord of the Rings show, Stranger Things season 5, that show's never gonna come out.
Kids are gonna be in college.
You know, they'll be full grown adults. Wednesday season 2 has been delayed, Yellow Jackets season 3 has been delayed. The only thing that is completed is Good Burger 2.
I didn't know that there was an Ocean's 11 prequel, but now that I know there is one, I want it now.
American Horror Story will be completed.
Wow, that's still on?
Oh, yeah, man. It just goes on forever. Interview with a Vampire filming, it's been suspended. Good Omens season 2 was completed prior to the strike.
We live in a time when TV isn't exactly TV.
Movie special effects go into these shows now, and those take forever.
I think some shows just go overboard.
The Rookie season 6 premiere push to mid-season with possibility of a shorter season.
Just when I get into it, it gets delayed.
Superman and Lois, that's delayed. Penguin production shutdown. Yeah, I was looking forward to that show. Ghosts, that show is so good. I've been keeping up with Secret Invasion. I think it's a great show. To me, appointment television died with the end of Game of Thrones.
Outlander is pretty good this season. The Blacklist just recently had its series finale after 10 seasons. The Strange New Worlds, and so far, I've only liked one episode.
I'm working my way through the new season of The Witcher. The Gemstones have returned. The Righteous Gemstones.
Some ways a parody of stuff that happened in the 80s with PTL.
Every TV preacher scandal. Of course, I've been keeping up with The Last Drive-In. Totally recommend binging Just Joe Bob.
Something that's kind of horror adjacent is Grimm. I've been binge watching it lately. I would count Grimm's series finale as a mixed bag. Overall, however, I think Grimm is still a great show. I would very much recommend Grimm, especially to those who like a mix of fantasy and horror, or who are wanting something unconventional out of a cop slash detective show.
And now, the conclusion.
But I actually took a little bit of a break from Grimm for a while to watch The Rookie. And I know that's not a sci-fi show or a fantasy show or horror or superhero or anything like that, but it does star Nathan Fillion from Firefly, and also Melissa O'Neill from Dark Matter. And every once in a while, they'll have guest or recurring characters that are played by actors that have been on other sci-fi shows. So I can't help but wonder if the casting director is a sci-fi fan or if maybe Nathan Fillion is suggesting people. But when that show first started, I thought maybe I'll give it a chance, but I never did. And because I'm just not into cop shows. The last cop show I watched was The Shield. And that was like a really dark show where the cops were kind of crooked and everything. And I thought, I'm not ready for another cop show. But I do sometimes go down the TikTok rabbit hole. And some people on TikTok will sometimes show videos of TV shows and movies that I don't know if they have the right to show. They probably don't. And people started posting a lot of stuff from The Rookie, and I started watching clips. And I was like, wait a minute. I actually like these characters. I actually like some of the storylines. And eventually, I actually reinstated my subscription to Hulu to watch The Rookie, and I did that for this one storyline that was happening right around late season 2, early season 3, and so I kept watching, and then when I got done, I thought, you know, I've probably seen enough clips of season 1 and 2. I probably don't need to watch them again, but then I was like, well, let me need to make sure, and then I realized I didn't see as many clips as I thought I did, and I then binge watch season 1 and 2. So I kind of started in the middle, looped my way around, but now I've seen the whole series at least once. And now I'm really looking forward to season 6, which is going to be delayed because of the strike. But this is a really good show. It's got great characters. Now in season 1, the training officers that are training, not just Nathan Fillion, who plays this older rookie, but also the training officers of the younger rookies, they're kind of a little bit a-hole-ish. You know, they cast them as being very tough, training officers and not very friendly. But over the five seasons, all the characters gradually soften, and they're still tough characters because they still have to be cops and do tough things on their job. But as far as their relationships with each other and their friendships and the way they stick up for each other, and even if they're not friends, they're at the very least allies, there is a softening. They actually act like just normal humans after a while. So I would really recommend this show. It's got great casting, great characters. Even though it is a cop show and they have to show, you know, dark stuff like people being criminals. And there's this one recurring subplot where this actress who actually passed away a year or two ago from cancer, she plays a psychopath. It's like she's a serial killer. And, you know, most serial killers are men, but she actually plays a female serial killer. And that's an interesting storyline. It gets really dark because of her. But the show still finds ways of instituting wit and humor as well. And so it's a really well-rounded show. And like I said, I'm not usually into cop shows. And now this is a show that I'm addicted to and ready to for season six and hope it keeps going past that. So, yeah, anybody who hasn't checked out Grimm or The Rookie, those are two cop shows. One a mainstream cop show, one a kind of hybrid horror fantasy cop show that I would really recommend for people.
Quality recommendations.
Yeah. So have you ever seen any of The Rookie or are you not into?
I haven't seen any of The Rookie, but now given your recommendation, I might check it out. I do have the Hulu. I might check it out.
At the very least, watch the videos on TikTok and see if you want to watch full-fledged episodes from watching those.
See, I think a lot of that is like marketing from the studios and like the streaming services.
Oh, really?
They figured out, okay, if we let people just post these TikTok clips and, you know, because I think they have it worked out. At least I know they have it worked out with YouTube that if someone hosts some kind of famous work or whatever, like clips of shows or whatever, that's fine as long as it's within like a minute 30. If it goes to like over that, then it becomes their property and the studios have the option of taking the ad revenue from that video.
Oh, wow.
You know, demonetizing it and taking the ad revenue. I know that's what some musicians do when like people just post their songs on YouTube, just post them out there and they're like, hey, that's mine. I own it. You know, they can give a copyright strike or just take the ad revenue. And there are a lot of musicians that just take the ad revenue.
One thing I've seen a lot of people do on TikTok when they post these videos is either they'll flip it like it's a mirror image, left becomes right, right becomes left, or they'll speed it up. So everybody's voices are a little bit higher, or they'll put some kind of filter over it where this kind of ripple of light will kind of wash over the screen every once in a while, because I think you can't just post something the way it is. You have to somehow alter it. And if you alter it somehow might qualify for fair use. And yeah, so I see quite a lot of that going on. And then sometimes people don't bother, but they're short clips. And but now I haven't seen as many The Rookie clips lately. So I don't know if maybe whoever is posting the clips before got copyright strikes or not. But I still see clips from other TV shows and movies just on there all the time. And I could understand if somebody was just flat out showing whole episodes. Yes, that is definitely a huge violation. I mean, you're basically broadcasting something that another channel should broadcast. But at the same time, if it's just little clips, like you say, it's almost like free advertising anyway. Because think about it. I am now watching The Rookie because I saw clips on TikTok.
And you would never watch The Rookie otherwise.
Right. Yeah. It because I don't have cable or satellite, so I wouldn't be seeing commercials for The Rookie. And even though it had some stars in there that I've seen in other shows that I like, even that wasn't enough originally. It took me seeing a storyline that I was like, I've got to see what happens at the end of that episode. And so I got Hulu, and Hulu doesn't have very great summaries of the episodes. So it took me a while to find which episode it was that I was wanting to watch. So I was watching other episodes in the meantime. So, it works.
Marketing of the digital age is weird anyway. And this might be the only way to go.
Yeah.
Just like cramming your show into as much of a bite-sized form as you can and forcing people, like, just force it in into their feed. Like, TikTok is the ultimate expression of ADHD in my mind. Like, 30-second to a minute long videos that you just constantly scroll. Yeah, that's ADHD right there. And I'm not going to sit here and say I'm better than that because I use YouTube Shorts. And that's like the RC Cola equivalent of TikTok. Not to disparage YouTube, but I mean, come on, guys. You rip that off. Like you say, it's just these tiny little clips and they know exactly when to cut them off. And you're just like, well, what happens next? There's some doctor show that I get all the time now. It's just like, you know, here's this girl, this little girl that doesn't feel pain. She busts her arm open with a baseball bat and then stapled it together. What happens next? Oh, my God.
It sounds like it could have been an episode of House or one of about another half a dozen doctor shows that I haven't watched. I think that was an episode of House.
It might have been an episode of House, but this was definitely a different show. He's like, I did watch House because House was basically, what if Sherlock Holmes was a doctor?
Mm,
yeah. And my dad is a huge Sherlock Holmes fan. And so I, through osmosis, became a Sherlock Holmes fan. And so, like, it was interesting to see, what if Sherlock was a doctor? Well, then you get House. And just like my favorite superhero is Batman, and Batman is basically, what if Sherlock Holmes was a superhero?
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of clips of House on TikTok here lately, too. And sometimes I feel like I'm almost doing a condensed binge watch of House sometimes just by scrolling through TikTok.
Well, I mean, with House, they definitely do cut out a majority of the slow, like, relationship drama. And they just leave you with the, here's the medical mystery. Here it all is, you know. Why is this kid suddenly, you know, convulsing when he's like super healthy or whatever? Well, it turns out he's got a piece of wood stuck in his toe. It's like giving him some kind of weird disease. And that's what made House interesting. But to get to that point, you had to watch like some weird interpersonal relationship drama and just like things that just, I don't care. Don't care. Just show me the weird medical stuff. But I totally think that TikTok thing is a new form of marketing. Yeah. And in a few years, we're going to find out the studios funded most of that.
I don't even know if they would have to fund it. Just let people do it and not be super picky about copyright stuff.
Even that kind of thing. I feel like you're just going to come out, you're just going to wake up one day and there's going to be an article from like Variety or somebody that explains the whole thing. But hey, it's genius.
And, well, we're going over an hour and 10 minutes. So do you want to try to squeeze in a couple more topics? And if so, what, or should we wrap up and save something for next time? Or
I have one more topic that I thought might be interesting. I don't know. Do you want maybe one more topic and then we call it a day, or do you want, we're going to just call it here, see what Dave's up to, or you want to keep going like two more?
Yeah, maybe one more topic each, because I wouldn't mind talking about Babylon 5. Now, I think mine might be quick. Of course, I always say I'm going to be quick, and then it ends up going a while.
That's confirmed.
But there is one thing I want to mention for Babylon 5, and that's it. So do you want me to go ahead and knock that out before we move on to your topic?
Go ahead and knock that out.
Okay, so Babylon 5, you know, it came out in the 90s. It had a spinoff called Crusade. It lasted less than one season. They tried to do a TV movie sometime in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it didn't take off and become a series. And Babylon 5 kind of sat on a shelf for a while, sadly. For a while, it wasn't on streaming. Then it finally got on streaming and more people watched it. I've even been to a convention before where I got to see J. Michael Straczynski in person, and people ask him, when will we ever see anything for Babylon 5 again? And he basically kind of sort of joke, maybe he was kind of sort of serious, that there's basically somebody at Warner Brothers who has some kind of grudge against at least Babylon 5, if not some of the other shows on that PTEN pseudo network that Babylon 5 used to be on.
Okay.
And that to get more Babylon 5, we were basically just waiting for that guy to die. And I think that was kind of JMS kind of joking. Well, I get the feeling now from something that JMS confirmed online that the guy didn't exactly die, but he did retire. And once he was gone, then the people who were left behind at Warner Brothers who actually liked Babylon 5 were actually able to do stuff with it. So it's been announced within the last month or so that there's actually going to be an animated movie for Babylon 5 called Babylon 5, The Road Home. And I don't know major details about it, but I get the impression it has to do with maybe introducing a multiverse to Babylon 5 where John Sheridan gets caught in some kind of tachyon field and he starts bouncing around to different timelines and has to make his way back home to his own timeline. I think it's going to be something like 80 to 90 minutes long, somewhere around there, so a little over an hour. And it's an animated TV show written by JMS. It's got as many of the voice actors who were actually from the original show as possible. He actually talked to those cast members and said, if any one of you feels uncomfortable doing this or any future projects without the original actors because so many actors from Babylon 5 have passed away, then we won't do it. And all of them said, no, we're comfortable with replacing some of the actors for some of the other characters. So for characters like Jakar, Veer, Zathras, a few other, even Sinclair, people where the actor has passed away, they've got new voice actors doing those. So yeah, we've got almost the full cast back, either original actors or new. And yeah, it's kind of exciting news to see something new for Babylon 5. But on top of that, within just the past few days, it's been announced that Babylon 5 will finally get Blu-rays. People kept clamoring forever, let's get Blu-rays. And we only had DVD and streaming there for a while. And I thought it was never going to happen. And sure enough, even Blu-rays are happening. And the pre-sales for both The Road Home and the Blu-rays for Babylon 5, the series, are selling really well already. Well, it's just pre-sales for now. But even the pre-sales are reaching like number one on Amazon. So if there's enough demand, there might be more animated movies in the future. JMS has kind of confirmed that. And who knows, if that does well and the Blu-rays do well, then maybe we might get that the reboot that's kind of been put on hold because of stuff shuffling around the CW and now the writers and actors strike. Maybe eventually we'll get a reimagining. But if not, maybe there's just some life left in Babylon 5, and that's good news.
I'm so happy for you that they're finally combining your two greatest passions of Babylon 5 and Quantum Leap into one thing. Like, that is literally like they've hacked into your iPad or your iPhone and are listening to you specifically to figure out what they got to do to make you pay attention again. Because wow, dude.
I wasn't sure what you're talking about at first, but I guess you're talking about Sheridan bouncing around timelines the way Sam Beckett and
yeah.
Crap. I forgot the name of the new guy.
Oh no, shoot.
Yeah, because the new Quantum Leap is pretty good too. I like that, but it's been off the air for a while in between seasons, and I forgot the name of the guy. Oh shoot.
The character's name is Ben Song.
Yeah, I do like Quantum Leap. I don't know if it's one of my favorite things ever. I think maybe a decade or so ago, I think I ranked the original Quantum Leap as my number 10 sci-fi show. But since then, a few things have kind of surpassed it. But yeah, it's up there. It might still be in the top 20. So, but yeah, I guess it is kind of funny. Yeah, combining that with Babylon 5 because John Sheridan bouncing around. Yeah, I guess I can see that.
That's just perfect for you, man. And I'm so happy that you get to experience that. Now, at the beginning of the broadcast, I made reference to the Barbie Oppenheimer double movie opening that just happened this past Thursday night, Friday morning, because they do that now. If Barbie is a success, and by all metrics I've been seeing, it will be a great success. This is the second movie that has been very successful at the box office after years of either being very low budget, like Barbie, or non-existent at all, like Legos. Is there a toy, maybe even board game, that you feel could be a movie, a successful movie franchise that hasn't been done yet? Because they did Battleship, they did Clue. Is there one, you know, is there something that you could see getting a movie like the Lego movie or now the Barbie movie out of itself?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think there was a previous episode, maybe Clue, where I gave my top 10 list of games, whether they were board games, video games, card games, whatever, that I would love to see adapted into a TV show. And Dave kind of pushed back on a few of them. He's like, well, like Samurai Swords. Well, that would just be Japanese history. And Risk or Risk 2210 would basically just be, you know, kind of political, military type stuff. And can't remember if I had another. I didn't pick really obvious stuff like Monopoly, but I think he said, you know, how would you adapt that? I said, well, I'm not smart enough to know how they would do it. And it would take some mental gymnastics to do it. But I think one of my top choices, if I remember correctly, if not number one, was Munchkin Quest. And I don't know if you've ever played Munchkin, but it's a card game that has all kinds of witty puns in it. And it's kind of fantasy based, but they also do superhero and horror type versions of the card game. And to be honest, I've only played the card game itself once or twice. And I think the reason I didn't like it so much is the cards themselves are kind of currency. Like you actually had to use cards to pay for better cards. And there was something about that mechanic that I just didn't like, at least in that one or two times I played. But there's a different version called Munchkin Quest, and I don't think they've done much with it. So it might even be out of print by now. But it's the board game version of Munchkin where you have these, you randomly place tiles on the board one at a time to form a dungeon. And because it's random, the dungeon is different every time. And you do use cards for special abilities and spells and stuff that you attach to various characters that you play along the way. And your characters kind of start off cooperative at first because they're all kind of weak. And so they're all trying to survive this dungeon. But then as they build up powers and magical abilities and special weapons and stuff, then they can be competitive against each other to try to win the most treasure and get out of the dungeon before everybody else does. And I thought, you know, that would make a pretty decent TV show or movie because it's similar to Dungeons and Dragons, but it's also got a comedic kind of stance to it. And it could be interesting to see characters that are kind of having to work together, but then eventually they get competitive. That might be an interesting dynamic. So again, I'm not smart enough to say how that would work as a TV show or movie, but hopefully somebody else, some writer out there who is on strike right now, maybe when they're off strike, can write up a movie or TV show and make it work.
See there it is again. That would be really interesting. What immediately sprung to my mind as I was sitting here listening to you was figuring out some kind of game show for that particular game. Again, as you say, I'm not smart enough to figure out the whole specifics of it all, but you know, there is definitely something there. Let's see. For me, I asked this question as I'm sitting here thinking about it. Immediately, the one that came to mind was Clue, and I was like, "Oh yeah, they've already done that very well. We probably couldn't go to that well again because all the jokes you could make about Clue they made in the first movie."
Yeah.
As I'm sitting here thinking about it, there's a game, I don't know, I think it's Deadly Mansion or Darkest Mansion.
Where it's like, I don't think I've heard of that.
you start out, everyone gets dealt a character. There's a DM, but the DM sets up the board and everything, and there are pieces that come with this game. Everyone gets dealt a character, and you start out in the mansion, and then as you go through, the goal of the game is to solve the mystery that you start out with, because there's preset mysteries. You solve the mystery that you start out with, and then one of the players turns evil and gets control of the board and has to set up however they turn evil, because there's like different ways you can go evil. However you turn evil basically determines what monsters and traps you get. And then everyone else kind of leaves and goes and like eats or, you know, gets a drink or whatever. And the guy that is turned evil, guy or girl that is turned evil, has to build the escape, basically.
Okay.
Once one person goes evil, then everyone comes back in, and then it's everyone else's job to escape. And you're like, well, how would that work as a TV show? I'm thinking game show.
Yeah. In kind of an escape room type scenario?
Yeah, escape room game show, basically.
Yeah.
And like one, and what it could be is, you get four players, and then whoever gets chosen to turn evil or gain control of the escape route then has the ability to win even more money if all of the others fail. Like it has to be like a cash prize.
Mm.
But yeah, that's my idea.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I think that would work.
It's not hard to be new and interesting, Hollywood. It's just very expensive.
And, you know, something like that, well, who knows? We might see something like that in the near future, because if the strike goes on, they might have to do unscripted shows that might be like what you're talking about, where, like you say, you kind of make it a game show and an escape room scenario. And who knows?
Who knows?
But both of our ideas might come true in some way, shape, or form.
Hollywood's just so desperate. They're like, hey, what are these guys doing? Let's listen to this episode.
Yeah. And actually, I found that list. It was from the Clue episode. I had 13 games that I wouldn't mind seeing being turned into a movie. Maybe these could work as a TV show. I kind of gave honorable mentions to Puerto Rico, Ticket to Ride, and Settlers of Catan. Number 10 was the Great Dalmudi card game. Number 9 actually was Monopoly, so I was wrong. I did throw that one in there. Number 8 was regular classic Risk. Number 7 was Magic the Gathering, which would be kind of similar to Dungeons and Dragons. Different kind of universe, though. Number 6 was Samurai Swords, which is, I think, possibly called Shogun in some editions. Number 5 was Battletech. Number 4 was the Ars Magica role-playing game, which is basically mythical Europe, like medieval Europe, but just with real magic. Number 3 was the Amber Diceless role-playing game, but we're actually getting a TV show on the original Amber story. So not the role-playing game, which is kind of where you play characters that are kind of children of the Amberites from the book series. Number 2 was Risk 2210, kind of a futuristic version of Risk. And number 1 was Munchkin Quest.
Nice. I've never played the futuristic version of Risk. The only Risk I've known is like the Victorian era, conquer the earth version. I would imagine it's still Risk in the sense that you start with your space marines, and then that works into the battle cruiser, and then that works into the Death Star.
Well, sort of. In Risk 2210, you've got the same land territories that you do in classic Risk, but in addition to that, you've also got ocean territories. I guess in the future, they've populated the ocean with either underwater cities or stuff that floats on the top or something. But anyway, you've got ocean territories that will link to certain land territories and sometimes each other. And the different oceanic zones each have their own kind of their own version of continents, where two or three ocean territories will form kind of like the aquatic version of a continent. But then you've also got the moon. You get to populate the moon. And it takes a little bit of extra effort to get there because I think you have to build a base. And then I can't remember. I don't think you have to build a rocket or any kind of space thing. But you've got to either play a certain card or something that allows you to actually start populating the moon. And I think the moon has three different versions of continents to it. And then I think once you are on the moon, it's that much harder to get back. But yeah, so you've got not just one type of territory, you've got three. And you do have bases, you do have generals. I think you got different types of generals. It's got some of the same flavor of classic Risk, but just with more complexity and kind of a futuristic tone to it. Greetings, discerning listeners. This is Todd, the editor, cutting in briefly. It wasn't until I was editing this episode that I remembered that probably while we were in college, Dave, and I decided to add some complexity and extra strategy to classic Risk by adding secret bases and generals. Since it was typically just the three of us and there were two extra colors of playing pieces, we each used an infantry piece, a cavalry piece, and an artillery piece from one of the spare player colors to denote three levels of generals. Each general would accompany an army, and each one had an extra level of advantage, like a bonus to a die or maybe a reroll. We also placed one type of piece each on a face-down territory card, with each card denoting a secret base. If that territory ever got attacked, the base was revealed, and each came with a certain number of reinforcements based on whether the infantry, cavalry, or artillery piece was on top of that card. We may have had a few other house rules mixed in too. I vaguely remember that we didn't fill every single territory with armies at the very beginning. I think we placed our generals first, and then maybe we spawned our armies only from those territories, maybe also adjacent ones. Leaving some blank territories at the start of the game added another dynamic compared to the usual game. The point of all this is that when Risk 2210 came along, it actually had some of the similarities to our house rules. It included different types of generals, each with a special ability, and rolling a D8 instead of the standard D6. And 2210 also had bases that could be built on territories for extra defense. The Japanese-themed board game Samurai Swords also had some similar mechanics. We probably could have done more with our version of Risk, but when 2210 and Samurai Swords came out, we didn't have to. Okay, back to the recording. I always enjoyed playing that. It was always tough, though. It seemed like whoever I played it with, there was almost always three players. And so it makes it tough because eventually two people have to work together to screw over the other one. But then sometimes that switches. And so it's not like it's easy to just form teams. It's like somebody is going to end up by themselves unless they pull somebody to their side. So, nice. But regular Risk is like that too. So
you speaking of colonized oceans just brought a whole other thing to mind. Did you ever watch SeaQuest?
I think I did a little bit, but I don't remember much of it. So I must not have been an avid viewer. I must have caught it whenever it was on.
I same here. Like, I just remember it being a thing.
The 21st century, mankind has colonized the last unexplored region on Earth, the ocean. As captain of the SeaQuest and its crew, we are its guardians. For beneath the surface lies the future.
I remember watching it because there was like a talking dolphin, which you only saw mm-hmm. him for like 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
And then its lasting legacy in pop culture is the fact that The Simpsons reference it in an episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The joke is the dog from Frasier and the dolphin from SeaQuest are going to fight.
Now, wait a minute. Who's going to fight the dolphin?
The dog from Frasier.
Oh, dog from Frasier. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I vaguely remember that the show had a genius teenager, because of course back then most sci-fi shows had to have that, and that somewhere along the way, I don't remember why, but I think a main actor left the show, and so they had to get a new captain somewhere along the way. I vaguely remember something else about the show, but I can't remember what. Like, I think there was something that happened in season 4 or season 5 where maybe the Earth governments changed and the allegiance of the vessel changed, or maybe they went rogue or something. I can't remember, but it was like this fundamental shift that happened halfway through the show.
Sequest actually lasted only 3 seasons, from 1993 to 1996, for a total of 57 episodes, which is still more episodes than a lot of shows have nowadays. There were cast shakeups in both the middle and final seasons, with Michael Ironside replacing Roy Scheider in the lead role in season 3. The final season also saw a name change from Sequest DSV to Sequest 2032.
But that's one thing about like 90s and late like 80s television. You were really programmed to believe that there were a lot more genius teenagers than there actually were.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if Hollywood actually just wanted us to all think we were smarter than we were, or just didn't really know teenagers. But yeah, man. I don't know about you. I was a decently smart kid, but I would definitely not call teenage me a genius.
I was kind of the same way. I mean, I did good in school and stuff like that, but I don't think I would be smart enough to be on a submarine or pilot a starship or invent the technology that this one kid did in the TV show Continuum. I don't know how somebody gets that smart that quick.
No, I was just hoping for like one of the Fred Savage movies to happen to me when I was a teenager. what was that one called where he ends up in a spaceship?
And I don't know.
Like the Navigator. I think it's the Navigator. He ends up in a spaceship and they just go around all these weird alien worlds. And then he gets homesick and goes home because like he had a fight with his brother or whatever.
I don't think I remember that one.
Yeah. It's one of those weird Disney, like we gotta pump something out and we have all of these animatronics from Tomorrow World that we're going to decommission. We got all this stuff. So let's use it. And we'll get Fred Savage. And we'll make this movie, like Flight of the Navigator, I think is what it's called. That might be a movie for the list.
Yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar, but I don't think I've ever seen it all the way through.
I can't imagine why you would. If what I'm remembering of this movie is accurate, like it literally could have been just a movie of the week.
Yeah,
there's no meat to this from my memory. Like all it was I loved like the weird, you know, Jim Henson inspired aliens and like some CGI graphics and a kid flying a spaceship. I'm sold. Let's go.
So would it be a cross between The Last Starfighter and Mac and Me?
Better than Mac and Me, but not as good as The Last Starfighter.
Okay.
And I, as a disabled person, I almost feel, you know, like I'm betraying, you know, my own kind when I insult Mac and Me, because that's one of the only movies in the 80s where there was like disabled representation. And so like, yeah, it's a really terrible movie, but it's got a kid in a wheelchair and I can't be mad at it, even though he does get shot with a shotgun.
Now, even though I brought it up, I think it's because somebody in a YouTube video or something like that might have mentioned Mac and Me recently. But to be honest, I'm not super familiar with it myself. So is the handicapped kid the main kid or a side kid in this?
Oh, no, he's the main kid.
The main kid. Okay. See, I didn't even know that.
The McDonald's alien, you know, shows up for the handicapped kid.
Okay.
Mac and Me, if you don't know, was the McDonald's Corporation's attempt to try and get into movies. And how they thought they would get into movies is by ripping off E.T., but using a disabled kid instead of the lead in E.T. and, you know, Big Pete. And why am I blanking on her name right now? She's the most famous person in that movie. She was in Firestarter, Charlie's Angels movies. Oh, God. Todd, you know who I'm talking about.
I might. Is she the one that has a talk show right now?
Yeah, she has the talk show.
Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore. There it is. Yeah, she's the most famous person out of E.T., Drew Barrymore. Mac and Me was a McDonald's vehicle to try and get into movies and sell more McDonald's. And the way they figured out how to do it was to rip off E.T., but use a disabled kid and kill him like three times in this movie.
Oh my goodness.
The disabled kid dies like three times in the movie. You can't tell me. And one time, literally, he gets shot with a shotgun and the aliens bring him back to life. Oh, instead okay. of the kid bringing the alien back to life, the aliens bring the kid back to life.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering, wow, how can he die three times?
Yeah. Well, his wheelchair careens off a cliff.
Bah.
And the alien breaks his fall.
Okay.
Then his wheelchair is somehow tied to the back of a car, and they go down the middle of a busy LA highway, not like an interstate, but like 66 basically. And his wheelchair is connected to the car with like rope or belt or something, and then the rope comes loose. And his wheelchair careens into the McDonald's parking lot and right into the McDonald's counter center. But then there's a dance party and he's okay.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I did not know that much about that movie. When I made that reference, I was kind of pulling something out of the air that I had heard recently and that I was vaguely familiar with. And yeah, you definitely give me a little bit of an education on that movie. I did not realize everything about it.
I've been in major surgeries before and been laid up with nothing to do and just like a pile of videotapes that my parents' friends donated and my friends donated to me to watch while I got better. And yeah, dude, you watch a lot of weird things.
Yeah, and especially from that time period because it was weird back then.
Oh, yeah. Like 89 to about 97 was just like the weirdest reality for like made for video films. Like, because you had to fill the shelves at your local mom and pop video store. So you just made whatever.
Yeah.
Again, sorry for the tangent, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this. Preston knows a weird random movie.
Yeah, this has been a good episode. We're over an hour and a half, so we should probably wrap up. But it's weird. Whenever we do these, you and I always find plenty to talk about. But we probably should wrap up for several reasons because this is getting long. It'll take longer to edit. And also, I've got to work probably starting around 4 or 5 a.m. I'm not sure when I'm going to get the call. It might be as late as 6, but it might be as early as 4. But I should probably start winding down and try to get some rest tonight. So
yeah, get some sleep, man.
But Preston, thank you for joining me, especially being willing to do one of these two-person things with Dave not feeling well. I hope he's feeling better. And maybe next time we do one of these, we'll actually have a quorum to do either a movie review or a TV topic. So, but yeah, I'm glad that you and I can do one of these episodes to kind of hold us over. And like I said, we always find something to talk about. It's a good conversation.
These are always a joy. I always have fun. I love just this off the cuff kind of conversations. And yeah, I have a great time. Again, we appreciate everyone that's decided to hitchhike with us this evening. If you'll please give Todd the gas money, that would be great. Remember, fans, we have all of the socials, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Please subscribe to the podcast feed so you could download us every time we release a new one. And do whatever makes you a discerning geek.
Yeah. Now, one little correction. We don't have Instagram. And while we are on Facebook and Twitter, I'm still way behind on posting stuff on Facebook and Twitter. I've had a hard enough time lately just kind of editing the episodes. And so I'm still not great at social media. I need to get better. And one thing I've thought about doing is maybe starting up a Discord channel, server, whatever you call it, because Discord is more of a conversation. And I might prefer that over just making posts on Facebook and Twitter. because with posts on Facebook and Twitter, I feel like it's almost like a presentation. I need to attach something, and especially on Facebook, you know, attaching graphics to go along with the review. It might just be easier to just be on Discord and just say, hey, we posted something, check it out. Oh, what's your opinion on it? Oh, okay. And just kind of responding to stuff there. I don't know where that'll work, and I haven't started it yet. I was hoping to discuss it with you and Dave first, but I don't know. Folks, maybe we'll do that. No guarantees yet, but if I get the clearance from the other guys, then maybe we'll do something like that, and maybe we can just start having discussions with fans. But yeah, until then, everybody, well, I was about to say our catchphrase, but you already said it. So I'll say the other catchphrase, which is, I'm blanking on that too.
May the force be with you.
Yeah, always. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.